Once more, my friends, we find ourselves in the quagmire of Asylum Films as they begin a new series of giant monster movies that sadly just barely count as kaiju films, so we've got to do it on this podcast. They're dry and stiff dialogue attempts to melt our brain this week, so stay along here with us as we try to keep our sanity with the help of our kaiju friends. This is Kaiju versus History, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your old professor who's sleeping on your couch, Miles. And joining me is the military secretly using San Francisco as bait, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing this week?
No need to warn people. It probably won't result in a ton of casualties. Ton of civilian casualties. I'm doing well, Miles. How are you?
I'm doing all right, all things considered. You know, we do have quite the stinker on our hands this week.
Do we, though?
Starring former teen heartthrob Debbie Gibson.
Had to Google who she was. Apparently,
really?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of her, honestly.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I don't think that's crazy.
I guess it depends on like how like your 80s pop foo is, but she was kind of bigger around the same time as Tiffany and like that kind of mall pop scene.
Is she the Robin
Sparkles?
There was
a perceived rivalry between the two, which they exploit in a further Asylum movie.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yes. So afterwards, you know, digging into the history of this movie, I found out a good deal about Debbie Gibson. But
yeah, I've always enjoyed both her and Tiffany. So it was kind of funny to see her because I was like, I forgot that she, because they always get some of these like older entities in these movies. I know Steve Urkel shows up in one of them.
Spoiler warning, Miles, it's the next Mega Shark movie.
I mean, is it a spoiler? Like it's a known cast member who's on the box. Like it says Jaleel White on there.
Spoiler, we are doing the entirety of the Mega Shark franchise on the podcast.
I would argue these are not kaiju films. They are tangential.
I think this one, and to be honest, I've only seen now, I think, the first two movies.
This one is the ones I've seen.
And that one are definitely, and we'll talk about it, obviously, as we get into this week's episode more so, more akin and more influential for the subgenre of kind of giant monster movies, the mega movies, which we are not doing on the podcast, but the series does get into Mecha Shark is the third movie, which is very much like a direct, I think, homage to.
Yeah, I've seen the Mecha Shark movie
films. And then also there's a fourth movie with Giant Colossus, which is kind of more akin to, well, it's a bunch of stuff, potentially Attack on Titan kind of monsters, but also Pacific Rim style. So
And they are doing we might have to revisit this franchise because they also are working on Mega Shark versus Moby Dick.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So I mean I am 100% going to see that movie. I've watched so many more of these Asylum monster movies than I ever thought I would, and it wasn't even for the show. This is like before the show existed. I've seen these movies just because they would pop on a streaming service or something. I'm like, well, why not? It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I need something to fall asleep to.
That is exactly what has happened multiple times with these films. I think I started with Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus, the second film, and in preview, and I was like,
the one I haven't seen.
I haven't seen
Colossus. I haven't seen Colossus.
Another spoiler warning. It's very bad, but I was surprised to see Urkel in there, and that sent me down the rabbit hole. Kaiju adjacent for sure in some parts, even though I think we do have to skip just the general Megalodon series of movies. There's like a ton of Meg ripoffs as well, but we are going to do the Meg on the podcast because that movie I think dips its toes a little bit more into what if the kaiju was an ocean creature.
And the second one does veer more into kind of kaiju. There's a kraken and stuff like that. But there's
Yeah.
There's other creatures where you can kind of, you can make the kaiju argument there.
And the sci-fi fantasy elements of it are enough to, I think, put it over the finish line, as it were, for kaiju like them. But yeah, we're not talking about those movies this week. We're talking about Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Yeah. So before we get into this movie, Patrick, tell us what is in a title as simple as this one.
That, well, I think a good deal, because I originally it wasn't going to be a giant octopus, and maybe that wasn't like where they're going with plot wise for titles. But Mega Shark has come out and was, I think, attached to the script from the very beginning when they decided to have a monster fight the Mega Shark. It made sense to go with a versus title, which, you know, just in its own way is very much a kaiju trope of having the two mm-hmm. giant monsters fight. And one, I guess, is more associated with the United States with Mega Shark. And then the giant octopus is kind of Tokyo adjacent, even though I think they come off the same kind of ice shelf.
Yeah, they both come from the same like thing in wherever the hell they are, because
yeah, one gravitates to San Fran and the other Tokyo. This movie probably got some of the widest release for any Asylum film up to this point, including some very limited theatrical play. So it did get translated into a lot of different languages, and the title kind of localized in some very interesting ways, besides the verses being spelled out or changed to against or things like that. In Brazil, this was just called Monstros Marinhos, Sea Monsters. The Czech Republic, Mega Shark versus Giant Squid. That's not any different. Why did I write that one down? Oh, Giant Squid, not Giant Octopus, which is very different. Hungary, it's Killer Shark versus Giant Octopus. Russia, the title translates out to just 2 million years later. I guess, you know, they're frozen or unfrozen 2 million years. That's what this movie's about. And I think my favorite is Serbia, Deadly Jaws against Giant Tentacles, which is pretty cool, you know, talking about the physical attributes as opposed to the monsters themselves. But yeah, most of the places across the world where you can watch this movie in other languages, they just translate mega or massive shark, and same for octopus versus octopus. Not a lot of variations, but it does make me tickled pink too, because you can see this just about anywhere. You know, you can see this movie in Japan, for example, and kind of embarrassing that this is some of our kaiju offerings in the same decade, where they're pumping out some great Godzilla movies, apparently a near perfect Gamera movie for you.
Not near, just perfect.
And we're like, how about a big shark and an octopus fight, but only for like 5 minutes.
On paper is not really a bad thing. And I mean, this trailer generated a lot of like ironic buzz. Anytime a film from the Asylum gets buzz, it's typically ironic buzz. The Sharknado effect, especially.
This is 4 or 5 years before Sharknado.
Right.
So I think this
trailer, like, people were just like jazzed by just how cheesy it looked. And the thing is like, I think people also take for granted, like, yes, you want this kind of cheesy story, but you're also going to get the worst effects.
Yeah, they released the trailer hilariously on MTV.com, but also on the YouTube, where they each got 1 million views and supposedly a lot of pre-orders for the DVD. In my research, I don't think I watched the trailer for this, but I feel like I can guess as to like what's in the trailer. Basically, every interesting piece of footage of like CGI that's in the movie is going to be spoiled in this trailer, because there's not that much CGI action, you know? What else can you... I suppose we could take like a minute and just watch it right now, but I don't feel the need to, you know?
No. And, you know, it's like when I started this movie up, you know, of course it starts, you know, just says, you know, The Asylum presents. And anytime you see those words, you know, you're going to have a time.
There is a time that is being had.
But this movie is, I mean, I know that people have fun with the Asylum movies. I get it. I'm not one of them, but I look, there is my fair of trash that I enjoy. So I don't besmirch anyone that like digs these movies because I do get it. It's just not my fun time. And I often struggle with Asylum movies. We have, you know, this weird plot. I mean, the basic plot is like this iceberg kind of breaks after there's a helicopter crash that I don't understand how that happened.
Yeah, it is said to be global warming, though, that unfreezes the ice.
Well, that's part of it. But like there, this helicopter crashes into the iceberg during the sequence. And I don't remember if like there was ever any reason for it to crash.
Well, so the movie could happen. That's why.
Oh, I know. But like, I mean, nothing hit it or anything like that. It just crashes.
I thought, oh boy, don't make me watch this movie again, Miles.
I don't think anything like messed with the helicopter. I think it just crashed.
I thought it was supposed to be the shark bit it. No,
did it? I don't.
Oh, boy.
Maybe it did. I don't know. It doesn't help when we watched these movies several weeks ago.
that's the thing. I watched this film probably two or three times, and each time I feel like I got less information out of it, like less of the plot was in my brain. All right, I'm watching the helicopter scene right now. Oh, we got some CGI icebergs breaking. That's actually pretty impressive, the CGI that they do have in this film when you compare it to the CGI that was in the previous two Asylum films, King of the Lost World and Monster, which leave a lot to be desired. It feels like, you know, for better or for worse, this movie, they really tried very hard to make a palatable film. Supposedly, that's the thing that you mentioned, you know, Asylum is all about. They are not leaning into the cheesiness, at least not at this point in their film career. Sharknado, I think, kind of changes that trajectory a little bit.
I remember reading it from a screenwriter who had like kind of applied to write stuff for Asylum, and all of his stuff was like super tongue in cheek. And they're like, yeah, we're not in the business of doing this. I'm like, well, why not? Because you're making these bad movies, like make them smarter. Like,
I have a giant shark fighting an octopus. I think you should throw in some goofs, some gaffes, some fun.
Like, it's the one thing I don't understand about these movies is like, if you have some young, hungry screenwriter who's capable, like, it kind of doesn't put to bed the idea that this is just a giant money laundering scheme, these movies, because you're just like, well, what is going on? Because I know there are plenty of screenwriters who could you know, do something cheesy and do something like just smart with even with what they have, even with the actors they have. If the script is good, like, that's fine. This script is not.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like they really pump in a lot. And I did see something with the director about how the producers wanted to make a more story focused plot that isn't, you know, reliant upon like quick cuts for like tons of action sequences. They wanted the characters and the story of kind of figuring out these giant monsters. They wanted that to work on its own. And I totally understand that, especially coming from some of the other Asylum films that seem like the script that they lost some pages to the script and they just decided to wing it. You know, King of the Lost World was really a rough start for our Asylum.
I mean, this
career
is certainly better than that. It's just the problem is like the problem solving is very dumb, and every sequence. I mean, we have these weird characters. So, I mean, so you have,
let's talk about them characters.
I almost said Reagan McNeil, which is from The Exorcist. Emma McNeil, who is our protagonist.
For sure. She's like the first main character that we meet, and everyone else kind of just becomes associated around her. So we meet her professor later. And
yeah, we get the professor after she's been fired for stealing this submersible that,
hey, Miles, she borrowed it.
She borrowed it. Yeah.
She always says that whole sequence is like,
it's that whole, how all that worked out just seemed very unpleasant. You have Alan Baxter, who is the aforementioned older professor.
Yeah, a pretty famous actor. No, I'm sorry. Sean Lawler is the professor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Sean Lawler plays Lamar. That's right.
Lamar Sanders. Yes.
Alan Baxter is the the head of the CIA?
He's like a slimy government agent kind of guy.
Yeah, he delivers
very, very cliched lines. It's like, you're the ones that said giant shark first, so you win the prize. It's like, all right,
come. Yeah, he's also like hyper racist, but also they try to make him self-aware about it, and I'm just like, I don't like this at all. They just made it worse. Saying the line, I'm an equal opportunity racist, is
very good.
It's not great. Like, I mean, I laughed at it, but at the same time, I'm just like, this actively sucks.
Sean Lawler is the actor that plays her professor, and he's been in a ton of great stuff. He was in Braveheart, Titanic, In the Name of the Father, and unfortunately, this is one of his last movies because he passed away in 2009 as well.
Yeah,
but he probably does the best job of any of the cast.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, believable. The thing is, like, he was in Titanic. He wasn't really anything. He's uncredited in it.
Yeah, he plays, I think, one of the people that work in the below decks. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's been in movies.
He's in a movie, but like it's not like he was part of, you know. And then we have who plays the love interest / like I guess Japanese doctor Seiji Shimada, who I recently I was like, his voice sounds super familiar. It's because I spent about 90 hours with him recently because he plays Sang, one of the guys working for Shinra in the Final Fantasy VII remake games.
Does he? That's interesting.
Yeah, he plays that character in Remake, Rebirth, and Crisis Core Remake.
I saw he does have a lot of video game voice work, but he's also done
Sleeping Dogs, which is great.
Yeah, he's done motion capture for video games as well. At this point, I don't think I had really seen him in a lot. Apparently, he was in Miss Congeniality too.
I would have seen him in Command and Conquer Red Alert 3, and that's probably about it.
Yeah, I don't even remember that game very well, but and you know, he in some of the behind the scenes footage, he is as shocked as everyone else that he plays a love interest for Debbie Gibson's character in having a Asian American man as not only the main character, but the main love interest. And to be fair, that is, I mean, I can't think of like other movies where that happens. You know, it's not in 2009, probably not very common.
Yeah, I mean, that aspect was cool, but like
they don't have a lot of chemistry.
They're not great actors. They don't have any chemistry. The whole lovemaking scene is one of the most hideously shot things I had seen in a while. It looked so uncomfortable for everyone involved.
Yeah.
That was not a good day. It seems like, the script is so superficial, and so because I mean I could imagine, you remember that fake Michael Bay Dark Knight script that made the rounds around this time, where it's like, you know, Dr. So and So, she is also the smartest and most gorgeous woman in the world, like that seems like this probably was the script, you know.
Like, yeah. The characters are not super three-dimensional. I think they try to give Debbie Gibson a few lifelines in the script with her character, but she doesn't really play like rebel / screw up very well, you know?
Yeah, no, she feels like she's so put together, even though her character arc is that her life is chaos.
Yeah. Multiple times characters are like, you're just flushing your whole career down the toilet, and it's like, are you talking to her character or to Debbie Gibson herself for being in this movie?
Oh yeah, because it's so funny because she's, I guess, crashing on her professor's floor, but or couch, but at the same time, it's like, well, did she not? I mean, you don't lose your job and then immediately lose your apartment, so like,
yeah,
I don't know, I understand what was going on there, and
landlord found out she lost her job. It's like, you're out on the street.
The other thing about her performance that's weird in this movie is at the end of the movie, I'm wondering if there was reshoots. It seems like she develops a lisp.
Oh
Really? And I don't know if it, I don't know if I just missed it the entire movie, or like she had to go to the dentist that day or something, because like all of a sudden she's got this weird lisp in the last like 5 minutes of the movie. I have no idea where it came from. And maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I was just like, what happened here?
Super oddly, she does not show up in Mega Shark versus Gatorsaurus or whatever the second movie is called. But her character does come back for Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark. So you will get more Emma McNeil. I knew you were worried about that, Miles.
Oh, the character
does make a return.
I was. And she is in Mega Python versus Gatoroid as a different character altogether.
Yes, a movie we're not doing on the list, which is hilarious, but we might go back and do like a mega special or something at some point in the future. But there's only so many of these movies I can stomach at one time. Supposedly the principal photographer for this film took place in January of 2009 over the course of about 2 weeks. So they really kind of slapped this thing together, and the film came out in May 19th. So very short production turnaround. I'm sure they had a lot of the CGI kind of already in the can, as it were, ready to go. Not a lot to say about these designs. You know, it is just a very large shark, and it is just a pretty cool looking giant octopus, but a giant octopus all the same. Some of the things that happens seem very kaiju-esque. There's fights against submarines. There's fights against, for some reason, the mega shark jumps 30,000 feet into the air to destroy an airplane at one point in the movie.
Yeah.
That is a thing that happens. And it's also in the trailer. It's like, why would you spoil that? It's like one of the funniest parts. And of course, the destruction of the Golden Gate Bridge. It's a fairly large plot point. I am correct. Once again, I've seen this movie like three times, but they do not tell people about the mega shark because they're hoping that they're just going to destroy it before people notice that there's a giant shark in San Francisco Bay, right?
And then it takes a bite
out of the bridge.
Just insane.
And yeah, the eventual end of the movie is like, oh, we got to let them fight. So they have the mega shark and the giant octopus kind of take each other out. But I would say the vast majority of this movie is them, these three scientist characters and McNeil, Sanders and Shimada kind of going back and forth over like, oh, how do we figure out what this is? And then once they figure it out, it's like, how do we stop a mega shark? And none of it super works, but it does feel sufficiently kaiju to me as a kaiju movie, even if the mega shark itself isn't super kaiju itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, what sucks is like for a movie called Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, there's very, very little of these creatures. It does kind of feel like some of those Showa movies where like Godzilla kind of pops in for the last 15 minutes. And this is that. And it's a bummer because, I mean, if you're watching a movie called Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, you're not there for anything other than watching Mega Shark fight Giant Octopus. And yeah. I mean, this is a slow lesson that I feel like filmmakers and studios have learned and are now only we're seeing the fruits of that. We're like in Godzilla Kong, the New Empire. We get full like motions of time where there's no human being saying any words for like 15, 20 minutes. We're just following monsters because that's who we're paying the fee to see, you know?
That movie is very well balanced, I feel like. And at no point do I feel like bored in that film. I think they are in this series going to kind of ratchet up more of the action as opposed to characters talking in laboratory kind of thing that we got. But of course, the next movie is Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus, which comes out in 2010. They follow that up with another direct to DVD, Mega Shark versus Mecha Shark, which is 2014. I think right around the time they also do Sharknado. And then the following year after that, 2015, is Mega Shark versus Colossus. Another reason why we're doing these films is the monsters in this film, I think, do show up in the 20 Twilips.
The Endgame.
Yeah, yeah.
The Asylum Endgame movie that's coming out.
Yes, that it's already came out. It's called, oh gosh, is it Apocalypse 2025?
Oh, did it already come out?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I'm struggling here because there's not 20, like
it's 2025 Armageddon, and it came out in 2022.
Oh wow, I didn't even realize that. Okay,
but all the mega creatures are in there, and I think the Colossus from the series does make return as well. So
there is so little meat on this bone. I feel like there's just not a lot to talk about because, like, the fight between the titular characters is okay at best. It is just a shark versus an octopus. It's not, these are special shark or octopuses. They're just big. So, mm-hmm. You know, neither of them are doing anything particularly super interesting. And, you know, even though I'm not one to, you know, have bad CGI bother me, like, they're not great looking models. And I mean, at least to me, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like a shark and an octopus, but like, there's nothing super awesome about that. You have a couple of sequences that are at least kind of neat, like the Golden Gate sequence that you mentioned, but there really isn't a lot to chew on here. It's for a movie that is, you know, a versus film and that is trying to keep you engaged, it does very little to do that. Like the stunt casting of which is something they continue to do, is have like kind of people who were, you know, I hate saying has-beens, but yeah.
Urkel is the star of the next movie, so it's cool.
He's not even the star. He's a supporting cast member.
Is he not? Once again, it's been a while since I've seen it.
But yeah, he's like a helmsman out on the ship or something.
To be honest, I while watching this, I just thought that Debbie Gibson was just like another actress in the kind of world of the Asylum films. And I mean, the fact that she was a pop idol in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like a chart topping pop star.
She's not a bad actress. I just don't think.
No, I don't think so either. She's given completely wooden dialogue. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Any actress they could have booked for this role, I don't think really could have done a better job.
Maybe if you gave me like a Helen Mirren, whose mere presence is going to elevate it, or an Angela Bassett, or like the women who can make any line sound awesome.
Yeah. She's like, we have to find out how to destroy the mega shark before it destroys us. They're like handing her Oscar as the credits.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, I would love to see Angela Bassett in one of these. I would love it in like some sort of alternate reality, because I don't want her to damage her excellent career by having this turd in her filmography. But like, I think she would only a presence like that is going to elevate these movies. or a real effects budget, one of the two.
Some psycho has put like 20 or so quotes on the IMDb page for this movie. So you can go back and like imagine what if Emma McNeil was played by Angelica Houston. And it's like, yeah, I think that would work, but that's not what they have in the budget.
Right.
That's not what these movies are for. I
there's another problem with The Asylum for me is like, it's the idea that this genre is just, you know, the bottom of the barrel. And yeah, that just doesn't taste good in my mouth, because it kind of reeks of disrespect for the kaiju genre. Like, mm-hmm. It's all the associations you have of like, oh yeah, you know, people just, you know, doing these for a quick cash grab. This is what this company is. This is what this company does. And so, yeah, it is kind of like proving those stereotypes right, doing, you know, what they do, which, I mean, I think that's another thing, is like, it's one thing to watch someone who like genuinely loves kaiju, which we're going to come up against, they still fail, but like, you can at least tell that they love kaiju films. And I mean, that's still digests a little bit better for me. It doesn't increase my enjoyment, but you know, that's another thing that kind of keeps me from enjoying these movies, even as just schlock, is that there is this kind of condescending tone to these movies.
Yeah, and I think the both critics and audiences kind of agree with you there. Rotten Tomatoes, this movie doesn't really muster more than like 1 out of 5 stars. 19% for critics, 20% for audience, and the critics' consensus is, quote, with shoddy effects, acting, and directing, this isn't so bad it's good, it's just so bad it's terrible. And I don't know if I agree with that. I think they are actually trying, as opposed to Monster in King of the Lost World, where they, I don't even know if that could be count as trying. Let's rate it ourselves, Miles, because it seems like we got some opinions here on
Shark
for sure. My enjoyment, it's I was shocked this movie wasn't as terrible as I thought it was going to be. It is boring. It is not good. By no means is it a good movie, but I was expecting it to be a steep decline for the Asylum film and just keep getting worse and worse. I really hated Monster and King of the Lost World, but this movie, I found myself actually being able to watch parts of it and enjoy, you know, the characters and their interactions. So I'm giving it a 4 out of 10 for personal enjoyment on our scale. That is disappointing. And to be fair, I think that it is pretty disappointing, but I don't think it rates much worse than that for me. But what about you, Miles?
Yeah, I don't enjoy this movie. And because of the reasons I just gave, I pop it a little bit lower. I give it a 3 out of 10. This movie, to me, it does fit the kind of what we consider a 3 out of 10. It's regrettable. And I do regret my time with it. It's not really fun. This movie does kind of seem to promise like, oh, you're going to have this kind of like 50s B style good time. And you really don't. It's not fun. And I feel like a lot of better people have similarly failed in trying to capture that in the modern era, because you can't quite make the same take, in a sense, that you could in the 50s. Like, you have to approach it differently. And some have done a good job on it. Like, some have done some wacky movies like Eight-Legged Freaks and stuff like that, where they understood the assignment, but you can't just, you know, make a bad movie and like hope everyone gets it. There needs to be some real wit in the script. And I think there's nothing in here, despite the fact that I do think Debbie Gibson holds her own as an actress. I think she's fine. She's not given any good material, but I certainly didn't dislike my time with her as a protagonist. But
yeah, she was fine.
Yeah, she was fine. The monsters don't do anything for me. The fight itself is pretty uninspired. Yeah, I just walk away just like, I'm not going to watch this movie again willingly.
Yeah.
Or sober, one of the two.
Anything under a 5 out of 10 from us is like, you know, we're not coming back to the same time soon. For a technical score, I'm also giving it a 4 out of 10. It does not feel as bad as the other two Asylum movies. And honestly, of all the Asylum movies I've seen, not that I've seen a ton, this is like an actual film. You know, it has a plot you can follow from like A to B. The actors do feel like they're doing their best with what they're given, you know, not that they're like the best actors in the world, like we're talking about, but I feel like they are trying. They are not phoning it in. And yeah, there's still a lot about the script that has a lot of troubles, and the CGI is what it is for what Asylum can put out. To be honest, it's so much better than King of the Lost World that, yeah, I feel like I can safely give us another 4 out of 10, which, you know, is also pretty darn high. That rates as a mediocre kind of on our scale. What about you, Miles?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I gave it a 4. I do think it's better than our prior Asylum experiences, even if the end result, it's still not enjoyable for me.
Not by a lot, but yeah.
But yeah, it is certainly polishing a turd. But yeah, I mean, just for the reasons I gave before, I mean, I think the script is extremely weak. I think most of the actors are there, but I mean, you know, you can't always blame the actor. I think the professor is really solid. I think the love interest, Vic Chow, is always seems confused that he's on screen.
That's a great way to put it. He's like, he just wandered onto the set. He's like, I'm in this scene. Right.
Yeah, and then Alan Baxter,
like, I'm kissing Debbie Gibson in this scene. Okay, let's do it.
Right, and then Alan Baxter, like, he's supposed to be hammy, but like, again, the script's so bad that like, I don't know if he's bad or if it's just the dialogue or both. Because like, I see a world where like this performance does go over with better lines.
Yeah, played by Lorenzo Lamas, who's one of those actors I feel like he's got to be in like a ton of Asylum films, right?
He's in a bunch of stuff. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's in a bunch. If they're not Asylum movies, they're Asylum-like movies. The Good likes of that. Scorpion Girl, Awakening, the movie.
He was in Sharknado 3.
Great. At
very least. He's in some of the Sharknaders.
But yeah, I'm right there with you. It's a 4 out of 10 for me. Oh, that's right. He was Snake Eater. I remember that movie.
For the its importance as a kaiju film, 4 out of 10? Or where do you see this landing?
I initially gave this a 4, but I think I'm going to go back down to a 3. Like, mm-hmm. I do remember, like, this trailer causing a buzz, and it kind of helped put Asylum more on the map in terms of what these people did. I don't know if that's a good thing. So I think my estimation is going down a little bit. I also, this is not really a kaiju film, so it's as insofar of like what it contributes in kaiju eiga, and like, yes, it certainly borrows some things from kaiju films, but I think it's all backhanded, and I don't think this offering is really worth it. So I'm sticking with a 3 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think this is an important kaiju film. As far as kaiju movies go, it is very adjacent. I do feel like as an offshoot of kaiju or giant monster movies, these mega monster films, which I don't know if it was even before this, but they just took over the Sci-Fi Channel, like giant bugs, giant shark kind of things, giant crocodiles. And then eventually they take over the Asylum, and there's a whole mega series of movies. This movie is pretty important to those because this is the first one that really got that ball rolling. And then, you know, it kind of took over the company until Sharknado came out. So if we're talking about just being a mega movie, this is a very important film. It's a kaiju movie, very skippable. So also giving it a 3 out of 10, which means I'm at about a 4. You're at a 3, and our podcast final for Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus is a 3 out of 10, and that's totally fine. That's what we gave King of the Lost World as well. I think not good film making. Right. So that is going to do it for this week's episode. You can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com and talk to us on Twitter, X, other social media sites at Kaiju Versus History. We have a Discord on the Cosmic Crit Discord. We have a channel there just talking about kaiju stuff, and also basically just posting every kaiju toy that comes about. Big news this last week from Funko. We're finally getting some more Godzilla kaiju toys.
Yeah, I like that they're doing the poster replica of Godzilla versus Mothra.
Yeah, I'm probably going to pick that one up. Those look real cool like that.
Yeah, that model looks real nice.
Liked it a good deal. And, oh yeah, we did have an email from David wondering if we were going to do other Cloverfield movies for the podcast. And I think we mentioned in the episode, we're not going to do the other two Cloverfield movies, but like the second they make a legitimate sequel to the original Cloverfield, you know, kaiju specific film, obviously that's going on our list.
Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane, I mean, not to spoil the movie, but it's more kaiju than daikaiju. And then I mean we've certainly done movies where the kaiju has as much of a screen time as Clover does in the Cloverfield Effect.
I don't know.
We absolutely have. We have watched movies for like a 10-second appearance, but no, I understand why they're not really kaiju movies in that sense, the way that Cloverfield was, even though I'm a big fan of all three of them.
We should do minisodes where we just review for as long as the kaiju is on screen some of these kaiju like movies.
No, like, because oh, like with yeah, I'm not going to release a 15-second episode.
Yeah, exactly. It just feels weird putting out half hour for those 15 seconds. But yeah, but not doing those, not any plans for the other Cloverfield movies. But like I said, they do say they're working on another Cloverfield film. So
yeah, I'd be excited. Even though they officially announced it, like they've been saying that like since the first one came out.
It seems like a... pyramid scheme at this point. It's like, yeah, invest in our studio. We swear we're going to make Cloverfield 2. Or that's what it's going to be called. Right. So what are we doing next week, Miles?
So thank you, Patrick. And thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next time when we return to the Evangelion Rebuild series for a second stab at remaking the acclaimed series into a movie series. Will the sequel that strays from the original material be best, or will fans cry foul? Find out along with us in History versus Evangelion 2.0. You cannot advance.